Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.
Hey guys, Will Durst here with a few choice words concerning Donald Trump's recent attempt to appear more presidential by slightly softening his position of shooting undocumented immigrants on sight. Lately, he seems to be almost kind of sort of nearly becoming semi-reasonable. But even the fluffiest down-filled Donald Trump could still poke huge holes in our democracy without swinging his elbows very wide. The commander-in-chief gets to command, chiefly, plotting not just the direction of the ship of state, but also staffing the helm and determining who gets to work in the ship's laundry. With victory comes the spoils, and that includes picking a cabinet, judges, and over 300 other appointments that don't require Senate approval, including commission heads, council members, foundation flunkies, national park eagle wranglers, theme park roller coaster rail greasers, swan boat concession sommeliers, and employees at shoeshine kiosks in federally funded transportation hubs. So based on his experience in the public spotlight, thus far, here's an educated guess as to who President Trump might pick for certain positions. Supreme Court Justice, Judge Judy, Surgeon General, Hannibal Lecter, Secretary of State, Vladimir Putin, Secretary of Agriculture, Tommy Chong, Environmental Protection Agency, whoever is CEO of Mobil Exxon, FBI Director, Rudy Giuliani, Attorney General, Gary Busey, Postmaster General, Scott Baio, Secretary of Defense, Buford T. Justice, Secretary of Interior, Arsenio Hall, Ambassador to the United Nations, Melania Trump, Secretary of Education, Sarah Palin, Secretary of Health and Human Services, Martin Shkreli, Secretary of Labor, Mike Tyson, Secretary of Transportation, that old guy from Duck Dynasty, Secretary of the Treasury, Scrooge McDuck, Executive Administrator of the Small Business Administration, Carl Icahn. And finally, Federal Deputy Northeast Regional Bridge Inspector, Chris Christie. For KZFR Radio, I'm Will Durst.
Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico Sports LTD, a locally owned sporting goods store featuring bicycles, sports equipment, and apparel for all seasons since 1985. Chico Sports LTD is located in the Safeway Plaza on Mangrove Avenue and is grateful for the support of local businesses and the community. And by Mattson Properties, specializing in the professional management of rental property in Chico, Oroville, Paradise, and Magalia. Alicia Mattson is a licensed broker specializing in single and multi-unit property. From move in to move out, Alicia can make your investment property a positive and profitable experience. For more information and to view available rental properties, visit MattsonPropertyManagement.com or call 570-6192. This is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM or online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Danny Toms. Tonight on Non-Human Radio, we're going to talk about another way the USDA spends our tax dollars, giving the dairy industry handouts for cheese that no one is eating. We'll also talk about a historic day for elephants in California and how humane meat is delusional privileged BS. All that in the vegan calendar events coming up. Jeannie, take it away.
Thanks, Danny. This week, the mainstream media, as well as animal activist media, reported that the USDA bought 11 million pounds of cheese in an effort to provide relief for the plummeting dairy industry.
How many millions of pounds of cheese?
That's 11 million.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a lot of cows, labor, and suffering. The United States Department of Agriculture, the USDA, recently announced plans to buy approximately 11 million pounds of cheese for $20 million. $20 million, from a stockpile created by the falling demand for dairy. Increased milk inventories, higher European imports, low prices, sluggish demand, yay, and shifting consumption habits, yay, have helped to create the huge cheese reserve, pushing the surplus to a 30-year high. Marianne Bozick, an economist at the University of Minnesota in St. Paul, said, quote, the USDA wants to demonstrate that it's there for dairy, end quote. The bailout will be issued by Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, who received a petition from dairy lobbyists asking for $150 million in emergency financial relief.
I'm going to send in my petition soon.
They don't want your petition. They want your check.
Just a million. I'll go easy.
As an aside, Representative Barbara Boxer and Rep. Jim Costa, who are both California Democrats, were among the legislators who signed the bailout petition. Jim Costa, who represents the 16th District, is out of Fresno, so that's no surprise. Other snooping around that I did online uncovered that the fact that the group California Dairies, Inc., a registered lobbying group, contributed $10,000 to our own Senator Doug LaMalfa just this year in 2016.
It sounds a lot like the maximum you're allowed to contribute.
Actually, yeah, you're probably right. There are a lot of $10,000 donations on that page. In addition to the $11 million in subsidies the USDA paid out to dairy producers just this month, between 1994 and 2014, that's a 20-year period, it pumped about $5.6 billion into the dairy industry by way of subsidies. So even though you and I don't want to spend our money on cheese, the government is using our money to do just that.
I don't want to spend any of our taxpayer dollars on subsidizing unprofitable industries. It's just ridiculous.
Yes, but they're saving the family farm and they're saving jobs.
For apparently a decade or two decades.
Exactly.
100 decades, billions of dollars. I don't know. It doesn't seem to be working.
Meanwhile, the global dairy alternative market, that's your plant-based milks like Silk or Almond Breeze and a bunch of others, was recently predicted to exceed $35 billion by 2024, with the United States expected to increase its dairy alternative consumption by 10% in the next 8 years.
Oh, you know, that reminds me, I think they formed their own, you know, non-dairy lobbying board to try to compete for some of these free government handouts.
Yep, because that's what it's all about, isn't
it?
A lot of people are drinking plant-based milks, and of course, the plant-based cheese trend is growing, too. And that said, other statistics show that domestic cheese consumption is trending upward at about 35 pounds per person. So why there's a cheese surplus, I really don't know. That's kind of opaque to me.
I think it might be because the government pays dairy farmers to stockpile cheese.
I guess. And maybe, can I put an optimistic spin on that?
Sure.
Maybe that 35 pounds per person includes plant-based cheeses.
Maybe.
Okay. Anyway, I always like to find out how our part of Northern California, the great NorCal area, relates to these larger problems. So I did some digging, and I found that there is an environmental watchdog group, not an animal rights or animal advocacy group. It's an environmental watchdog group called Food and Water Watch. It created a great website called the Factory Farm Map, and it showed me that in 2012, Glenn County had over 17,000 head of dairy cows on farms that averaged over 1,000 cows each. And then Tehama County had an estimated 4,400 head of dairy cows on farms averaging about 700 cows per farm. So Food and Water Watch compiles this information from the USDA Census of Agriculture, which the USDA takes every 5 years. So for this study, they defined a factory farm as a dairy farm with 500 or more cows. And they had other thresholds for other forms of agriculture like beef, pig farms, and others.
It's actually unusual in that the government has some of the information here about these activities, and typically they're trying to hide a lot of this.
Yeah, yeah, they try to bury it. I think that group had to do a lot of digging into county by county records to accumulate it also.
Or on paper or on computers from 1975 or something.
Yes, that's true. That's true. So anyway, that's of interest because we know that there are some smaller dairies in Butte County, like the one at the Chico State Farm. But those didn't hit the measurement threshold for a factory farm. So what this information means to me is that factory farming is going on right here in our backyard. It's at great cost to the animals who suffer. We can talk about the suffering inherent in the dairy industry if we like a little bit later. And of course, there's a cost to the environment. And of course, there is a huge amount of water that's going to keep these animals alive, and where it's coming from, we don't know. It's probably coming from other farmers. It's coming from our groundwater. It's probably better ways that water can be utilized. So anyway, so this is just to say it's not some abstraction that we can say is the fault of some greedy farmers elsewhere. Those farmers are in our area, and they're benefiting from these government handouts at the same time that they complain about too much regulation.
It's nice when you can have it both ways, right?
Yeah. Anyway, so if you just tuned in, this is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, foothills, and beyond. You're listening to Non-Human Radio with hosts Jeannie Trezino and Danny Toms. We are talking about government handouts to the cheese industry. So, yeah, I mean, we can talk about handouts and bailouts. Do we want to look at this as a bailout like we saw in 2009 with the auto industry?
Well, that was just one time, right?
It was one time.
This seems to reoccur quite a bit.
Came with a lot of strings.
Right.
The auto industry had to agree to increase, I believe, the mileage, the miles per gallon of its fleets. It also had to pay it back.
Right. I mean, I think that a bailout, you get paid back. This sounds a lot more like a donation out of the kindness of, I guess, the taxpayers' hearts to prop up somebody else's business. Because we all do that, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's, you know, this is one of those things I think conservatives, liberals, everyone is actually on the same side of the issue. It's just that it's so easy to mask this behind, you know, a culture war or single issue voting and just be like, oh, these crazy vegans don't want to eat meat, when that's not the argument. The argument's that, you know, the government is throwing everyone's money away at businesses that aren't profitable for products that nobody's buying, that they literally have to stockpile and then they give out as, you know, government cheese programs.
Yeah.
Nobody wants that waste. That is the kind of waste that anti-government folks are typically talking about, but there's a lot of sacred cows, for lack of a better word here.
Yeah. Our government is leveraged and leans towards supporting small businesses. I think the other element here is that the groups that are benefiting from this bailout are not small farms. I would say a lot of them are these big farms or these factory farms.
I don't know that there's a lot of small farms left. So.
Exactly. There's been so much. What's the word I'm looking for?
Consolidation.
Thank you, Sue. A lot of consolidation.
I was coming up with conglomeration, but
yeah,
it didn't work.
That's not quite right. That's cement. So
aggregate. So, all right.
Anyway, so, yeah, I'm not sure what we can do about it. I know that every time the ag bill comes up for renewal, there's always a call for let's end the subsidies, but they seem to be kind of set in stone.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the donations, but I think the maximum donation probably is $10,000, which for business is not that much. And you can literally give 10 grand to every politician within 100 miles. It's probably tax deductible. And you effectively just bought their votes, and that's what goes on in many of these programs. And they've grown from very small things during the Great Depression, which is only one or two generations ago, and government doesn't exactly move fast.
Yeah.
But they sure managed to reapprove these bills, which have gone, you know, are now in the billions of dollars.
Yeah, which raises my other pet peeve is the modern day farmer who says, my family's been farming for generations,
right.
But it's not like that many generations, and every generation has had to adapt and change at every turn. So,
right.
Yeah. Anyway, what do we have next?
So coming up next, Veg News reports that California became the second state in the nation to outlaw the use of bull hooks by circuses and other traveling animal shows.
Get out. Really?
Yeah.
You're reporting good news?
Yes. For those that don't know, a bull hook is basically a very pointy stick. It's not a nice device at all. So the bill easily passed both chambers of the state legislature with bipartisan support and was signed by Governor Jerry Brown on August 29th.
Yes.
The bill's author, Democratic Senator Ricardo Lara, said, "California's commitment to the humane treatment of elephants is strengthened today. Banning bull hooks removes cruel and horrific treatment against these kind, gentle animals."
Yeah, and you know, you can go and you can watch behind the scenes of elephants at circuses, and you may or may not see a bull hook being used, but you will see it being brandished, and that's because these elephants are taught to fear it when they're just babies.
Yeah, I mean, Jeannie did the research on this one, as usual, but I actually was reading up earlier today on it, and you know, I knew of this, you know, as many horrific practices, but it's just infuriating, and it'll just really piss you off, frankly, if we can say that on the radio. As Jeannie said, this is, in every single instance, they're carrying that hook. That is the tool. That is the master's whip. You know, that's the father to the kid, do what I say, and he raises his hand.
Exactly.
You know, it's a threat every single time. You can kind of, if you see, you know, the old-timey movies with the lion and the whip, a part of your brain is like, well, if that lion gets loose, I want to have the whip. Nobody thinks of elephants that way. You know, elephants don't go berserk and just eat you. Not that lions would either.
But elephants do go berserk.
They do go berserk, but that's not how you think of them,
yes.
Right? But then you see that in every single instance, the guy's got the bull hook because that elephant knows, and it's operating, it's not doing tricks, it's operating out of fear of punishment. So it's just infuriating. So last year, Brown vetoed a ban on bull hooks, which are sharp hooked metal clubs that circus trainers use to control elephants by sticking them into sensitive areas of their skin. I also think people get away with this because the animal looks so much larger. You know, you don't think it's as bad as it is, but it's against the law now. Nearly 60 jurisdictions in major cities such as Los Angeles, which banned the bull hook in 2013, Oakland, which banned it in 2014, and Minneapolis have already banned them, which I just said, and last month Rhode Island became the first state to do so. Interestingly, Governor Brown vetoed a criminal bull hook ban that passed both houses during the 2014-15 legislative session, saying that he did not want to further complicate the California Penal Code. So that was a criminal ban. That is, he did not want to create another type of crime for law enforcement to prosecute. As we said earlier a little bit, you know, we don't need necessarily big government everywhere, more laws that aren't enforced. Bill sponsor Senator Ricardo Lara tweaked the language of the bill so that the violations would be subject to civil penalties, including revocation of any state-issued wildlife permits, rather than criminal prosecution.
Right, so it's like administrative law almost.
Right, I mean, yeah. they you know, this Senator Lara, he did a great job here. You know, he made a way to make this bill pass. And interestingly, no time was really lost for the elephants in this process, because even though these were happening in 2015 and 16, both bills have an effective date of January 2018, which is also always slightly infuriating when you hear about something horrific happening or some world disaster. Like, well, we're going to fix that eventually, but in the meantime, cross your fingers.
Yeah, we celebrate today, but it's going to be, you know, a year and a half before
right.
It actually helps the animals.
Yeah. So, let's see. Ringling Brothers and the Barnum & Bailey Circus also dropped elephants from their traveling shows this past May under pressure from animal welfare advocates.
That was a big win.
That was a big win.
Animal advocates have been protesting and filming outside of Ringling Brothers performances for years.
Right.
And we don't go away.
Right.
Because the elephants are still there.
I mean, even going back to the government cheese story, so to speak, who goes to zoos? You know, it's not a cultural heritage of, by God, I'm an American, it's 4th of July, guns and zoos. Like, this is an industry that's just sort of lurking around. People like animals, of course, but, you know, or traveling circuses, I should say, in this case.
Yeah.
You know, SeaWorld with the orcas, you know, some people go, but it's not really, it's easy enough to ease these things out as you see happening.
And, you know, it is happening. You have things like Cirque du Soleil and Soul Circus and some other circuses that are just have people. You know,
yeah.
we really like watching very physically fit, acrobatic people doing
stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, art is nice, you know. Putting animals in a cage and poking them with a stick was, you know, what we did 3,000 years ago. So.
And we still are doing it quite
a bit. And we're still doing it, yeah.
And the cool thing, too, is this affects traveling shows. So there's a company that's called Half Trunk Will Travel that a lot of animal activists have been pressuring, because what they do is they contract out with things like county fairs and private parties to bring an elephant for people to ride.
Right.
So this limits that type of abuse of animals, elephants as well. So it's good. It's going to be good for the elephants after a while.
2018 can't come soon enough.
Yeah, you're not kidding. You're not kidding. So moving on. Let's move on.
Yeah, let's move on.
A study recently published in the journal PLOS One, which is an open access nonprofit science journal, casts new light on how consumers and the perceptions of how meat is raised shapes their opinions on how meat tastes. The researchers conducted 4 studies in which they had college students try little samples of meat, like beef jerky and roast beef, that had different descriptions attached to them. Sometimes it was meat from a quote, humane source. Sometimes it was factory farmed. And sometimes in their control group, more neutral information was provided about the source of the product. But in reality, it was always the same meat. So that allowed researchers to check for statistically significant differences on how the, quote, different meats were rated by the students who consumed them, as well as how much they'd be willing to pay to buy the meats in question, right? So same product, different description, different label.
Reminds me of us talking about humane meat a few weeks ago, and it's just marketing, you know?
Yeah.
Here's a study proving what, of course, people have known for, again, thousands of years, that, you know, you sell shiny, nice-looking fruit or happy meat or whatever you're selling. You don't say you want this tortured, rotten thing.
Yep. Yeah, so when it came time for participants to pick what they thought was the better-tasting meat, they believed meat labeled as coming from a factory farm was found to be less pleasant in appearance, smell, taste, and overall enjoyment. And so consumers in the study showed a reaction only to the factory farm labeled meat, which was negative. So they also found that participants were willing to pay 22% less for factory farmed products, and they consumed 8% less than meat from what was labeled humane farms.
Those are pretty statistically significant numbers, really.
Yeah. So what the researchers conclude is, we show you that that what you feel very directly influences not only how you interpret what you see, but also very literally what you see. We call this, quote, affective realism, the tendency of your feelings to influence the actual content of your perceptual experience. So your feelings are affecting your senses.
How many times have we talked about you hand out vegan cupcakes and you put vegan on there and nobody will pick it up? This tastes funny. If you don't tell everyone, they just eat it. They say it's delicious.
Yep.
We talk about local vegan options in town where restaurants will offer something, call it out as vegan, doesn't sell. It turns into this negative cycle of saying we offered vegan stuff and nobody bought it. And we're kind of like, well, you put a big flag on it saying it's weird and different.
Yeah.
You put gluten-free on it, everybody's going to buy it because that's an acceptable current marketing term.
Yep. So exactly. What should our non-vegan listeners, which I assume there's many of you out there, what should you take from this research? I think you should understand that food companies now have scientific proof that they can charge more for food just by slapping some good marketing terms on it. So, like, you see the terms free range or free roaming, for example. Those are USDA poultry standards. So if you see that term on beef products, make sure you find it exactly what the heck that means. Because
you remember the gluten-free salt that we've seen go around?
Exactly. Or like low-fat stuff that is naturally low-fat.
Low-fat water.
So anyway, strictly speaking, grass-fed, as a description, that beef can only come from select small farms that apply for a special program. And the USDA ended its regulation of that term in January of this year, right? So I think a lot of times when you see grass-fed, what you're seeing is where a portion of that animal's life was on pasture, which is common to almost all beef. They're typically raised as young animals out on pasture because it's cheaper.
On government land, as we discussed,
that too,
there's a theme running
good old
throughout
Clive
this.
And Bundy, yeah.
So.
Anyway, if you just tuned in, this is KZFR 90.1 FM, and you're listening to Non-Human Radio with Jeannie and Danny.
Are we ready for the calendar,
Jen? Yes, we are.
All right.
Yeah, I'll make it.
So that's all we have for news today, because I kept interrupting Jeannie. Now it's time for the Non-Human Radio Weekly Calendar of Events. Back to Jeannie.
So here's some upcoming animal-friendly events in Chico. All the info on these events, as well as other items we mention, are posted on our website at nonhumanradio.com. And if you have an event that you'd like to share, please contact us via Facebook or at nonhumanradio@gmail.com. Coming up this weekend, Animal Places Rescue Ranch in Vacaville is looking for volunteers to help with one of its hen rescues. They're going to be rescuing about 1,500 layer hens from a large egg farm, and they will need volunteer help at the beginning of the month to perform health checks, declumping, and barn cleaning. Listeners may remember that we reported on a similar effort back in April of this year. So, and if you can't make it out to volunteer, you can also apply to adopt one of these rescued hens.
Maybe
and
we
turn
could,
a bad into a good.
Follow up with a volunteer and do an interview or something.
Absolutely. There are some Chico folks who are going to be going up this weekend. And, it would be great to bring them in studio. Coming up next, this Saturday, the Vegan Red Bluff Potluck is happening at a private residence. And their theme this month is Mexican food. So please check out the Vegan Red Bluff Facebook group for more information and to RSVP. I just heard about this. Next Wednesday, September 7th, the Butte Humane Society is holding its Supper Club fundraiser at Aonami Sustainable Sushi from 6 to 9 p.m. Aonami is going to be donating 15% of its proceeds to the Butte Humane Society. So I hope that listeners of Non-Human Radio will head over there after the show and go get some vegan sushi, because it's just excellent.
Good job, Jimmy, setting this up.
And then next Saturday, I just want to point this out, another local fundraiser, Saturday, September 10th, the Chico Cat Coalition is holding its annual Moonlight Meows fundraiser. So I only have two words to say about that. Well, three words. One, cats. two, vegan options. That's highly unusual to see at these fundraisers in Chico in general. The event will feature a live DJ, some surprise entertainers of some sort, a silent auction, and a raffle. You can call 894-1365 for more information, or you can buy tickets online at chicocatcoalition.org. So, yeah, it's not an all-vegan fundraiser, but they only have two dining options, one of which is non-vegan, we won't talk about that, and one that is vegan.
Excellent.
So, yeah. And that's it for the calendar. And that's about the end of our time. This half hour sure goes fast. This was a busy news week with some good news. And, yeah, I just enjoyed chatting with you about them.
Yeah, Jeannie, thanks for the good news this week. I think the animal rights thought of the week is by Paul Shapiro, Vice President of Farm Animal Protection at the Humane Society of the United States, who wrote in an op-ed for the Huffington Post, "Imagine the following CNN headline: Government buys $20 million in surplus Pepsi as demand plummets. As outrageous as such a government handout to the soda industry would be, that's exactly what the U.S. Department of Agriculture is doing for the industrial dairy industry."
Exactly. If you wouldn't do it for Pepsi, shouldn't do it for dairy.
Yeah, and I like Pepsi. I
mean. Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. Thanks to Sue Hildebrand for her mentoring and her mad engineering skills. Be sure to stay tuned for her show, The Real Issue, coming up next.
This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM, Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, or its staff. Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist Rockers Rise Against.
If you missed any portion of this show or you want to listen again, visit the archives at kzfr.org/shows. This is Jeannie Trezino and Danny Tom signing off. Until next week, be different, be better, be kind.
Go vegan.